Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to the Bundesliga show brought to you by Over the Bar. We're checking in tonight for yet another Monday evening show. And I'm delighted to say not only are we joined by Peter, but as you can see, a fresh face in the top right corner. We're very happy to be joined by Alex, Alexander Silk, who obviously is jumping on this evening to talk to us this evening about, well, all things Bayer Leverkusen, have a bit of a celebration, a bit of a good chat about all things Leverkusen. Alex, welcome to the show. Thank you very much for coming on. How are you doing this evening?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. Thank you. I'm just glad to be here.
Excellent stuff. Peter, how are you? How are things on your end?
Doing very well. Another excellent weekend of Bundesliga football. Mark and I took in a couple of live matches. We'll have some vlogs soon. But pleased to welcome Alex to the show. Should be a great discussion we have for you this evening.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, before we get cracking and talk a little bit about the Leverkusen match of the weekend, Alex, obviously we've just had a little bit of a chat off air, but just as a bit of an introduction to everyone that's watching this evening, would you like to just kind of introduce yourself, your background with Leverkusen, your history, and in terms of where you've picked up supporting them, because, it's really interesting for everyone to find out a little bit more about that. And I'm sure you're very well known already across the Leverkusen family.
Okay, so I started supporting Leverkusen around like 2013. So that's basically the time in which my family managed to get cable TV, able to actually see like Champions League matches. For example, I remember the first match which comes to memory is the playoff against Lazio. First leg was 0-0, second leg was 3-0. Over time my interest in Leverkusen grew and grew. My first Leverkusen match that I went to was just after the pandemic was easing off a bit. It was the away game at Glasgow. It won 4-0 on that, but I went alone, but I left with so many friends. I happened to overhear a few people speaking German in my hotel. I walked over to them and ended up spending the entire weekend with them. And also saw the UK fan club. And the UK fan club, if you're a Leverkusen fan based in the UK, not just in the UK, but basically anywhere in the English-speaking world, I highly recommend getting in touch with Alistair Venables, who's the leader of that, and think about joining. Unfortunately, given the success that we've got at the moment, the membership's now closed, but it gives you so many opportunities. For example, the end of season party, first end of season party that I went to, we met the manager at the time, Gerardo Ciuani. We also had a stadium tour with Rüdiger Rollborn, the all-time appearance holder. And after that, we went back to the Stadionek, the supporters pub, for the actual party itself, and we managed to get Fernando Caro, the club CEO, to come and answer a few questions as well. I've also got my website, Berkself Daily. I started a couple of years ago. It's basically started just to compile all the transfer rumours that I was seeing all the time. It's a bit quieter now with transfers. But instead, I've got on to making notes during the game and creating detailed match reports. So it's a great place to look at if you've perhaps missed the game, because it gives you all the key moments. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I always check in with your match reports. I read it thoroughly as well, obviously ahead of tonight's show, in obviously the Gladbach result ensuing. So, I mean, again, before we get properly into the match reaction as well, Alex, just to touch upon the season so far, I guess the main question to ask you was, did you see this coming?
Well, given the summer preparation, we did go into the season, in my view, with the second strongest squad in the league, for definite, much stronger than Dortmund, who had obviously lost to Bellingham, placed them crazily with only Nmecha, Guerrero, and then with Ben Sabayani, who, to be fair, Ben Sabayani, I thought, was quite a shrewd choice. I mean, I thought he was going to come to Leverkusen for a little bit, but some reason it just hasn't clicked with him. RB Leipzig, always threat, but then again, they did lose Gvardiol and Szoboszlai, so. But yeah, I was not expecting it. But that being said, one thing that I always mentioned when I was talking to people about Leverkusen last season is that we didn't see the real Xabi Alonso, because you could tell he was only doing his best with the players he had at his disposal. We didn't have a proper transfer window. So we were playing against Leipzig and only having two shots on target, but winning 2-0 with Singh right at the back, or other games, we would be dominating possession. But this time, given that we've got players like Ronaldo, Xhaka, Hoffman, all the players with experience, and players which Alonso basically handpicked himself, actually able to control the game and play the way he wants to. And thankfully, the way he wants to play is extremely good football.
So. Yes, it is very enjoyable. And so, yeah, going on to the game then. So we'll try and break it down into the first half and the second half, I guess. And I'll come to you first, Alex, but then obviously Peter as well. It'd be good to get your thoughts and reaction on the match overall. Obviously, typical timing when we have you on, it ends up being a 0-0. But either way around, it still wasn't lacking for drama and for action. And again, obviously, we were just chatting off air just a moment ago, reflecting on how, the result being 0-0 is far from disastrous, but it's obviously not what you would have wanted. That first half was, both halves were pretty dominant. You know, statistically, Leverkusen were absolutely dominant. The way that they moved the ball, particularly in the first 15-20 minutes, was exceptional, I thought. And obviously, there was a few half decent chances. Obviously, there was the strike from Amiri, and then a couple of chances for Hoffman and Wirtz. But then I think it went for a slightly quieter phase, and Gladbach kind of worked themselves into it on the counter attack as well. But then I think Leverkusen got back in shape a little bit more and finished the half particularly strongly with some really good chances as well, again, for Hoffman and Wirtz. But the ball just wasn't quite falling in the right place. A couple of shots straight at the keeper, Niklas, who had a really good game. And Gladbach, in fairness to them, defended as stoutly as I've seen in a long while, particularly all this season. So from a first half perspective, Alex, were you impressed with what Leverkusen were doing compared to maybe the first two games since the international break or the winter break? And secondly, do you just think that the chances that you created were just, you know, happened by chance, some good blocks, some good saves that kept them out?
Yeah, so with the last two games we've had against Leipzig and Augsburg, we haven't played a good 90 minutes. We played maybe a good 45 minutes. But thankfully, we didn't have to wait that long for things to click this time around. So we played extremely dominant. I was waiting, and I made a note that Leverkusen didn't allow a Gladbach touch in their own half until the 18th minute, which is insane. and then, yeah, we just didn't allow them any space to breathe. The keeper did make some good saves, but it was really just down to our poor finishing. Perhaps we were a bit too confident, I think. For example, Wirtz's shot, when Xhaka wins the ball and in their own box, he just seems to just pass it into that. It seems to go in slow motion because you've got Niklas is right on the far right hand edge of his goal, and he basically just passes it straight at him, and which basically been the case for all the chances in the game, it seems. was pleasantly surprised to see Amiri doing so well. Obviously, given he rarely plays anymore, he had a great chance to the game from the right hand edge of the box. We basically played a perfect first half. It's just really, really frustrating to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it already felt quite early, even 30 minutes in for me, and I don't know if you agree or not, and Peter, you come in now. Just felt like already it was going to be one of those days. Peter, do you want to kind of talk us through the second half as well a little bit and some of those great, if we're talking about reliance on the fullbacks, Frimpong and Grimaldo as well, and that's, I had no idea how either of them would score.
Well, as a tactics enthusiast, I'd be a little bit interested to get Alex's take on the Tellus substitution. Do you believe that they were out of Xabi's league 3-4-3 after Tellus came on?
When Tellus came on, basically, Grimaldo, he's very versatile. So he's done it a few times this season where he moves Grimaldo into the centre. So, yeah. Tellus can go on wings. It's still 3-4-3. I think, in my opinion, Tellus should have came on much earlier, but he should have replaced Frimpong instead. Frimpong had an absolute howler.
Yes, as he did last week. Yeah. Well, yes. And speaking of which, that was, of course, the major talking point of the second half was the missed chances by Frimpong. There was also Grimaldo flashing over. And we really thought that Lucky Leverkusen was going to perhaps snatch a dramatic late win for the third consecutive week. There was a promising corner involving Florian Wirtz. It was Schick this time who put it wide. And there was a very artistic play from artistic piece of play from open play in second half injury time as well. I think that, and I highly recommend that people check out Alex's match report. I just read it myself before we got on air. He mentioned that Jorge Iglesias got here just a little bit too late. They only confirmed that loan signing after the full-time whistle this time. But another thing that's great about Alex's match report is that, much like the German press, he went into great detail about the statistics in this game, which were insane. 70 touches in the opposition penalty area. There might be a slight discrepancy there. Kicker says 70. Alex says 69. We'll give him.
I went by up to.
But there were also, 947 passes, a 92.3% pass rate for Leverkusen, 28 efforts on target, 10 efforts on goal without scoring. And what the kicker did a little bit was compare this to the 2018-19 campaign, in which Leverkusen at that time under Peter Bosch, I'm sure the name makes Alex tremble just hearing it. Yes, they were one of the most notoriously biggest underachieving sides in the Bundesliga that year under Bosch's stewardship. And of course, the subsequent year, or no, it was 2 years after that, where we had that Jonathan Tah era error against Robert Lewandowski, also under Bosch's stewardship, so that really cost them a run at the title. This segues into my next question for Alex. With so much going right for Leverkusen right now, what is there anything that you're overtly concerned about? Is there anything that you're seriously worried about? Is there anything that brings out those Peter Bosch demons for you?
Okay, so, thankfully we don't have Peter Bosch anymore, because the difference between him and Alonso is massive. Bosch literally wanted possession for the sake of possession, because he thought if the opponents don't have the ball, then they can't attack us, they can't score. Whereas Alonso is all about possession with purpose. And even without the ball, he still tries to control the game. That's a massive difference. There are certain aspects which kind of concern me. That we haven't got Palacios potentially for another few weeks. We're going to miss the Bayern game with him, and it really does make the midfield look thin, because with Xhaka and Palacios, we have perhaps the two best central midfielders in the league, and they don't just collect the ball and pass it around safe. They always look forward, especially Xhaka, who has, I believe, like the most forward passes in all of the league. Okay, so we've got two main concerns. First is teams do what Gladbach did and just sit back and absorb all the pressure, and that is still a bit of a weakness for us, because like I said, Lonzo does like possession with purpose, but at the end of the day, the players are still largely the same as what were last year.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get a team like Roma, for example, they don't do well against that. They need some transitions, which they didn't get at all against Gladbach, apart from a few odd ones, like, for example, the Frimpong chance when he gets played through by Wirtz. And the other thing is the mentality factor. Of course, it's not Leverkusen anymore. It's not Vizekusen. They haven't really... No one there is responsible for anything that happened in 2002. But there's still a comfort zone in Leverkusen. Then they might get a bit... lackadaisical. They might not take it too seriously. They might go into a game with too much arrogance, perhaps. Or because the pressure isn't the same as Bayern, they might just think, oh, it's okay, we lost. Those two are my main fears, I'd say.
Interesting stuff. If we finish on the game itself and we can kind of go a little bit more open into some questions, and there's a few in the live chat right now, and me and Peter have got quite a lot as well. And to fire away, Alex, and then we'll move on to a little bit more of reflection on match week 19, because don't want to reflect too much on a 0-0 draw. As you say, it was a good performance still from Leverkusen, a high quality performance, but just that finishing let you down. I think on another day we'd be talking about a 3-4-0 win. Also credit to Gladbach. We often talk about Gladbach on this show, myself, Peter and Mark, about how open they are, or how entertaining they are to watch, because they don't defend, but they did defend quite well, in fact, at the weekend. So let's just have a look at some of the questions in the live chat. Evening, Erin. Evening, Balan. Thanks for joining in. I think Mark's watching along somewhere as well. He's showed his support by for the title. Let's have one doobie doobie doos. Here's gone. From Balan. Alex, the result wasn't ideal. Do you feel you can win the Bundesliga? Don't be shy or nervous. Feel free to share your thoughts. So do you still have that confidence, Alex? We always like to do predictions and put people on the spot anyway on the show. So rather than leave that to the end, we might as well just start off with it.
Well, it depends. It certainly did hit the confidence a little bit. But at the end of the day, you still got to realise we're still 2 points ahead of Bayern Munich. People are acting like we've already lost the title. Ages to go. Ages. But at the same time, it would be a bit stupid of me to say that we're going to win the title, because Bayern Munich, you expect them to win every game they play. You still can't say that about Leverkusen, even with the way they're playing. Just don't have that same reputation. Not only that, any Leverkusen fan would tell you there's no point celebrating too early.
Yes, quite indeed. Yeah. Thank you, Balan, for that question. We'll come to a few other ones a bit more generic in a moment. I just wanted to pick up on a few, which I think you've half alluded to already, Alex. And it's kind of like your thoughts and feelings about the squad, which you're now having to rely on because of players being missing because of injuries, and obviously because of international representation at AFCON. For example, Amiri's a player that has boggled the mind for many a Leverkusen fan. I thought his introduction or at least the first 20 minutes of the game was quite promising. He looked really motivated. He was, you know, he was making some really neat passes, made some great challenges as well, and obviously had that early shot. But he did drift in the game eventually as well. We'll try to go through player by player in some of these players that have come in rather than the regulars. So Amiri's not really one of those, though, because he only just came in. So what have you maybe thought of the likes of Nathan Teller, Stanisic, obviously Kovar came in as well for Radetzky and Net. So what have you made of the players that have come in and stepped up or not stepped up during that break?
So they've done their job, basically. That's all you can say. Kovar, he had a very good Europa League campaign. I think he's had something like 3 clean sheets and 7 up before that game, making it now 4 clean sheets and 8. So he's a very able keeper. Obviously, in preparation for the big cup game in Stuttgart. Well, against Stuttgart in Leverkusen, sorry. Then you got Hincapié. I don't know why people worried so much about Hincapié coming in. Because literally last season, he was our best defender. He was the best defender. But because obviously he had his injury and Kasunu stepped up to the plate massively. He just hadn't had a look in. Stanisic, him, he does his role well. He's a squad player. He just fits in where needed. He isn't exceptional. I don't see quite how Bayern fans get so hyped over him. He does his job. I don't get the same confidence with him as I do other defenders. Andrik, he literally said he is angry with the lack of game time. At least now he's getting some, albeit not in his best position. I think against Darmstadt on Saturday, he probably fit into midfield, given that we're probably going to rest Xhaka and Tar's going to come back. Teller, when he first came, the first few matches I've seen, I saw of him, it was a bit of a letdown, given he was actually our most expensive player, believe it or not. I wasn't expecting him to fill in for Frimpong, though. I was expecting him to be more of a DRV replacement, but he's actually doing extremely well right now. And to be honest with you, I think Frimpong has to worry about his starting spot. Schick, of course, 24 goals only a couple of seasons ago. More goals than Haaland. He did quite well when he did his 16-minute hat-trick against Bochum in his first game back in like 402 days or something crazy. But he's just lacking that X factor that Boniface has. He's not a striker which can create a chance out of nothing like he can. We are missing Boniface quite a bit, and I do think he would have made a difference against Mönchengladbach, because whilst we were trying to walk the ball in at all times, he would have just taken shot from anywhere, and more shots, more chance for goal.
Yeah, absolutely. And then one player that we've very briefly touched upon in terms of a new player incoming is Biora Iglesias. Obviously an experienced striker from La Liga. He's been scoring goals pretty regularly for Betis. He's come on loan, I think, Alex. So what have you made of that? Like you said, it almost came, you know, 24 hours too late. He might have been a good player to have introduced against Gladbach.
Yeah, they say that he could have done his medical as early as Wednesday, but because Betis was so focused on trying to get a replacement, I don't know if they have got a replacement looking like Avila or Raul de Thomas, I think. I can't lie, he was not the first name that I was going to be thinking of, but it does make a lot of sense. At the start of the window, it was said they were going to be looking at a more variable striker, someone that can play on the wings as well as centre forward. That's probably because at the time we thought we were missing Boniface, Teller, and Adli to the Africa Cup, but That's obviously changed since, especially with Boniface's injury, taking him out till April time. It makes a lot of sense to bring Iglesias in. He hasn't really hit the ground running this season. He's only come off the bench a few times in the league and scored a couple of games in all couple of goals in all competitions. But if you look at his previous seasons, he's had double figures for each of the last three seasons.
Yeah.
He gives me confidence in front of goal. It's nice to have such an experienced alternative because Klozek has obviously been very hit and miss as well.
Yeah, Klozek's a weird one because he came with quite a lot of a reputation, and we haven't seen him getting too many minutes. Have you been underwhelmed by him so far?
Yeah, I can't lie, I have been. He came with massive reputation, like the youngest ever top goal scorer in the Czech league, for example. He kind of reminds me a bit of Havertz in the sense of his physical build, obviously not in terms of his like playmaking ability or anything, but also in his post Leverkusen days where we just can't find a position for him. There's a player there, but where do you play him? Because up front he doesn't score the amount of goals that's required. On the wings, he doesn't have the necessary speed or agility. It's just how do you use him? Well, if we manage to find that question, I'm sure we've got a future £50 million player. But as it stands, I think he's going to be one of the players that will be looking to shift in the summer.
Wow, do you think? Peter, we'll open it back up to you. Have you got any more follow-up questions for Alex in around particularly the kind of squad players that we've seen come in and try to step up to the plate in, you know, that we've seen since the start of the second half of the season?
No, I think Alex covered it very well. Hincapié was always a good defender. As Alex correctly pointed out, he was Leverkusen's best defender last year. Has been known to go borderline with some dirty tackles on occasion. The Ecuadorian has, and Robert Andrich is not squeaky clean in his own right, either in his press interviews or in his play. It was an interesting squad selection from Alonso. I think Stanisic was probably the right call to plug into that back three and give him a chance. Amiri really shocked a lot of us after his transfer saga with Leeds and his familial agent, so on and so forth this summer. But Andrich has done well in the back three this season. He did fairly well this time. Alex has more or less alluded to what's really good about Xabi Alonso as a trainer, and that is he's always thinking three or four steps ahead. And the Kovar start is an excellent example of that, as Alex alluded to. He's getting him warmed up for the Pokal fixture. Kovar has also been the Europa League keeper and kept all of those clean sheets. A general question I have for Alex, if that's possible. You talked a little bit about meeting the Leverkusen fan scene. And something that's very, very important to keep in note insofar as German football fandom is concerned is that even though Leverkusen are a non-50-plus-1 club, they do have tradition and they do have an ultra scene that mirrors that of a lot of the rest of German club football, much more so than Wolfsburg, for example, which would be the closest analogy to a company team. Would you care to share some anecdotes with us about your time with the Leverkusen fan base and how you and your thoughts on them?
Of course. You talk about our ultras. Our ultras are actually the oldest ultra group in Germany. Like, that's our tradition. There's a massive difference between a club like Leverkusen and a club like Leipzig. They're worlds apart. You can't, and it really annoys me when they just tarnish us in the same brush. Leverkusen were first founded, obviously, by the workers of the buyer company, just because they wanted a club to play football after work. And it was just like, obviously amateur for quite a while. And I believe in the 40s, Leverkusen actually asked to be called, well, Leverkusen always known as Bayer Leverkusen, but they actually asked for the Bayreuths to be on the badge. That's another thing, difference between Leipzig and Leverkusen. Leipzig imposed the Red Bulls on their Leipzig sixth division team, whatever it was, whereas the people of Leverkusen actually really wanted to show that they're linked to buy it on their crest. And then my experience with the Leverkusen fan scene has been really, really good. Always felt welcome. I always go to a Leverkusen trip alone, but when I'm there, I am never alone. You always get people, random people talking to you. They love the fact that you're from abroad, because despite its international reputation in Germany, it is still quite a small club, especially compared to, say, local rivals Köln or Dortmund or Mönchengladbach. Got all these massive clubs around. There's not really much room left for Leverkusen, so obviously only got very small population. When I've been in the stands, it's been always rocking. Last few games I've been there, I've been in the Nordkurve, and it is absolutely packed. Literally to the point where you just feel like you're going to fall over if you take the wrong step or something. And yeah, it's insane and extremely underrated.
What's your favourite game that you've gone to, Alex?
Favourite game's either my very first game against Celtic. There's only 165 of us at the time in this sold out Celtic Park. Yeah, we made plenty of noise, and it was fun, because by 70 minutes you could just see all the Celtic fans just getting off of their seats and just leaving. And then you also had the 2-0 home win against Atletico Madrid last season, Champions League.
Yeah,
I wasn't expecting that whatsoever. But God, it was crazy to see the reaction to each goal, because just completely out of the blue, the form at the time. And then there was another game. Oh yeah, it was a game against Freiburg. Last game of last season, what season before that? We were basically from the halfway line of the game. Yeah, I think it might have been last season. Yeah, because after the game, Karim Bellarabi, he went into the stands and he did his song, and well, he started chanting with the fans, and yeah, it was really good.
Excellent stuff. So before we move on to just a little bit of match week 19 reflection as well, some of the other games, let's just quickly look ahead then for Leverkusen, Alex. And from a fixture point of view, obviously if we throw out the Bayern game for now, because obviously that is huge, the other five of your six games, I think they look entirely winnable. So obviously there's the interesting squad selection that you have for Darmstadt this weekend. Then also you go into, you know, six-pointer mode versus Bayern, and that's not for us to ignore, because it, you know, it's such an exciting game for us to look forward to and to enjoy. But I think depending on what happens, obviously in the next two games, it can really, you know, can be a make or breaker of the season in terms of like gathering momentum or really feeling a bit of a stutter. Because if Alonso maybe gets things slightly wrong, squad selection wise for Darmstadt, who are fighting for their lives, it's not to be taken lightly. And then Bayern obviously is Bayern. Obviously the pressure could be building by that point dramatically. But on the other side of things, you could be absolutely flying. So How much are you looking forward to this next stretch of games?
Very much so. Yeah. Thing is, people got to maybe calm down a bit with Bayern. At the end of the day, it's just another 3 points. We could drop 3 points. Same time, we could win 3 points, but it's still 3 points. We could lose against Cologne, or we could lose against Heidenheim. And it'll have the same effect on us, really. It's a long time to go. The game which I'm most looking forward to isn't in the Bundesliga, it's in the cup against Stuttgart. that will be decisive, because obviously with this year's cup fixtures, you've only got one other Bundesliga team left. Mentioned Gladbach, who play against Saarbrück, and he knocked out Bayern and Frankfurt, who says they can't do it again. Perhaps like the easiest route to a final possible. Yeah, and then hopefully, maybe, as someone said in the comments, maybe a repeat of something like the Hertha Berlin second team. And you also got to think the Europa League is coming back too. So I think those cup competitions will decide how well we do in the league, because we have got the chance of an unlikely treble. At the same time, we will, given the squad depth with injuries, potentially we'll be put into some tricky decisions. Do we focus on the league, or do we go for an easy trophy in the Pokal? I say it's easy. Anything can happen, really.
Yeah, very hard to predict. But yeah, as you say, the treble is still on. So yeah, fingers crossed for you, Alex. As we move forward into the season, it's just going to get more and more exciting. We can't wait to see how things pan out for Leverkusen. I'm very confident that Leverkusen will end up with some sort of silverware. I can't decide what silverware they'll end up with, mind. But anyway, we could talk all night with you, Alex, about Leverkusen, but we have a duty of care to talk about the rest of the matches or some of the more exciting ones from this weekend. And so, Peter, we might as well start with a bit of VfB action, shall we? It was obviously a humongously exciting match. I mean, because obviously in the UK, the viewer rights are so hard Sky Sports to show. So I had to watch the 2:30 games UK time on a betting app, basically. So I was just like right in at my phone on the tiniest of screens watching the match. And well, it was heart-pounding stuff, very well, end-to-end in a sense. What did you pick out from VfB's win? I mean, you must have been super impressed, because I damn well am.
And you deserve to be. You absolutely deserve to be, Rory. It was an excellent tactical constellation from Sebastian Hoeneß. He went with a 3-4-3, playing Jamie Leveling up top. That was his solution to the slumping Dennis Undav's form. Undav began on the right with Fürich on the left. All members of the attacking trident had an excellent game, of course. Leipzig were... It might have been a different story had Xavi Simons not been suspended, of course. But to take nothing away from the Stuttgart performance, this was, of course, Undav's first hat-trick for Germany. That's how the papers described it. See how... Shows you how desperate we are for a nine in the national team. But in any event, a beautiful game from the front three. Wonderful game once again from Angelo Stiller, the old Hoeneß protege on set pieces. He set up two of those goals. And Wagnermann, what an assist from him. Mm-hmm. Really nothing negative to say. Well, with the exception of the fact that Zagadou and Anton blew their marking on that one corner. But Ruault was he won that that midfield ball on Stuttgart's second goal, so he impressed as well.
He did really well. Yeah
absolutely. You have anything to add to that, Rory, as a Stuttgart fanatic?
Not much more, to be honest, Peter. It was just great to see, really entertaining. As I said last week, I'd obviously joined a couple of the RB lads on a podcast, and I was thinking it would be quite an exciting game, but I was going 2-2. I expected a bit more of a reaction from Leipzig, which really didn't come. Obviously, as you say, their two goals comes from a bit of a a bit of poor marking off a corner, and then Openda's goal is a bit of individual brilliance on the break in that sense, which is what I was worried about, being caught on the break in that sense. Alex, have you been impressed with Stuttgart, or similarly, what are your thoughts on Leipzig this season? They seem a bit up and down, don't they?
Yeah. Well, Stuttgart, just wow. Wow. I mean, if they continue to play like that the rest of the season, who knows what can happen? I genuinely feel scared of Stuttgart as a Leverkusen fan. They play just like us, maybe even a little bit faster, and it's just frightening. And it's really impressive what they did. Five goals against a team which, before the season started, supposedly going to go for the title with Bayern, at a time when they don't even have the top goal scorer. And if there was a time for Stuttgart to eventually collapse, this was the game. But they didn't, and that tells you that they're going to keep going all the way to the end of the season without really any struggles whatsoever. It's crazy. As for Leipzig, yeah, very up and down. He is a difference maker without him. Obviously, there are a worse team. That being said, they still have quality on paper to do a much better job than they did. And defensively, so against Leverkusen last week, they really like to be compact as possible. The difference was this time they just weren't. Yeah, generally just really, really good performance from Stuttgart.
Yeah, they switched off a lot. I think Ram's often guilty of it at the back post, or, you know, Undav getting his header at the near post was, you know, everything about that game was excellent for Stuttgart, and it was the opposite for Leipzig, who are now they're not 1-4. They've lost their first three since the winter break, which is obviously exceedingly rare for Leipzig, so they need to get themselves sorted. Obviously off the back of a Dortmund win, Peter, against Borkum, who were also aided by a hat-trick hero, Niklas Füllkrug, getting his three, two from the spot, wasn't it? Obviously one being teed up by Sabitzer, coming back away from another bit of calamity defending. You're never too far away from it with Dortmund involved, where Borkum get their equaliser. Obviously Schlotterbeck getting in the way of the second choice keeper Meyer, and it was just a bit of a mess there. But Peter, anything that you spotted from Dortmund? Obviously they've done their job, 3 from 3 in the matches that you expect them to win. Anything particularly positive, taking their chances, being a bit more clinical, or is it just opposition and maybe clouding our judgment slightly?
Well, first and foremost, what happened to Niklas Füllkrug's promise to let Jadon Sancho take the next penalty? That never materialized. I believe he broke his promise in that regard. Dortmund are fascinating tactically at the moment. As a matter of fact, I have to watch a good bit of some clips on the overhead again, because I can't decide whether or not they were playing a 4-4-2 or a 3-5-2. It's really weird, because Mattsson gives... slides into midfield quite a bit, and Sabitzer and Özkan were already working as staggers. So, been a little bit busy today. That's something that I'll go into a deep dive in the column a little bit later in the week, because it requires more rigorous study. But it's quite the interesting tactical system that they're running here, and I believe that we can expect great things from them. These two Premiership returnees, Mattsson and Sancho, continue to look strong. Weak spots in the team, such as Thomas Meunier, will find solutions for those eventually, and Nicky Sule. Other than that, it's complex. What they're doing tactically is quite complex. I don't know if I doubt Alex is scared about them making a title push and making this a 3-horse race. Are you?
To be honest, not particularly. With Dortmund in the past, they always used to have such an amazing style of play. kind of like what Leverkusen have now, but maybe with a bit more defensive vulnerability. But now I feel it's more relying on the star players' individual brilliance, and the opponents aren't the best reflection of where Dortmund are at right now. Stuttgart, for example, and see how they do against them. A team that actually knows a way to play versus a team which just does what it has to do with the players producing good moments. Yeah,
absolutely. And then to the game, Peter, that you and Mark would have delightfully enjoyed over the weekend. Well, one of the two that you enjoyed, of course. Augsburg's home defeat in the end to Bayern. And we thought this would be a close game, and so it was in the end, you know, pending a little bit of late drama. Well, you know, how was the atmosphere? How was the day? But obviously we'll be able to get, an image and a picture of that, obviously, once the vlogs start to come out in due course. But talk us through the game a little bit more. I've only seen the highlights myself. I haven't been able to study it as much as I would like to. How did the game feel? Did Augsburg always feel like they're in the contest?
I think that you can always put Augsburg in any given contest because they have been developed a reputation as comeback kings. I believe that 15 of their 29 points this season have been accrued from comebacks. And we very nearly saw it again. Yeah. You know, obviously I'm not going to lean in too much into what's going to be presented in full color and fully edited in the vlog. You know, Sven Michel's miss from the penalty spot is obviously pretty huge. This could have ended in a 3-3 draw. Mm-hmm. There was Bayern were still the superior team. There should be no question about that. There should be no fuss about that. Alphonso Davies responded to his recent benching with a very, very strong performance. Rafael Guerrero on the right did well. I don't think I've ever seen him play on the right before. I've seen him play in midfield, but only on the left-hand side of midfield. Alexander Pavlovich continued to justify those of us who believe that Joshua Kimmich is probably doing more harm to this team than good at this juncture. Leon Goretzka not only had a strong match with an assist, but went ahead and took the piss out of the Augsburg pitch in his post-match interview, saying, you know, basically saying that this club is that's very Leon Goretzka-like, I would have to say. Kane scored once again. He ended that scoring drought and now is on back on pace to break Lewandowski's record with 23 goals. I have to say to anyone who's wondering why Bayern had two purportedly goals disallowed for offside in this match, and I didn't realize this in the stands, not until I looked at the review. It was actually new Augsburg signing Christian Jakic from Frankfurt who provided the direct assist on both of those goals, therefore, yes, for some reason Jakic didn't turn out to be a marquee signing. Did you see that coming, Rory? I no way.
Not so much.
No way. I think that Chris Zaniakic would be. but anyway, so what are our Leverkusen expert? what do you think about Bayern's chances of challenging you for the title after this? I mean, they're very, very shaky in a lot of respects. Are you feeling good about that big match coming up in a couple weeks' time?
I feel relatively confident. For Bayern Munich. Yeah, you say they were superior against Augsburg, but they still weren't as superior as Leverkusen were when they drew against Gladbach. We didn't concede two goals. They did concede two goals. And were it not for VAR existing, it could have been a very, very different result. And you also got Coman. He's injured now as well. Yeah, so God knows how long that list is. Injuries... Yeah, as long as we don't get scared and we don't crumble under the pressure, we play how we want to play, as Alonso always says, then in a head-to-head right now, I think Leverkusen would just edge it.
Hard to disagree at the moment, isn't it? Or like you say, everything that is going at the moment, both teams are having to deal with injuries as well, and missing players through different international respects. I mean, Augsburg, I have to say, if we're giving an award to the most improved team this season, obviously under Thorup, hard to say that it wouldn't be Augsburg, to be honest. Can't think of anyone else who have really turned a corner as much. Well, I might have said Freiburg before the weekend, but they obviously fell to Werder, who are now, you know, taking important points as well. So, we'll just close up tonight's show with just a nod to the rest of the weekend's action. Werder 3-1 winners against Freiburg, a really good result for them. Frankfurt keeping up their European push with a 1-0 win over Mainz. A hard-ish watch, that one. Couple of 1-1 draws. Wolfsburg now, they're looking like they're going to be on the recruitment hunt quite soon, if not already. Peter, how long has Kovac got to pack his bags, do you reckon?
That's a tough one because, I mean, obviously, I think the season is, after the third consecutive 1-1 draw, I mean, I don't see how they get back into the European title hunt unless they change trainers. But where do you find one? There are good candidates out there. We know that Bo Svensson and Urs Fischer are available, but I don't see how either one of them would want to touch this club with a 10-foot pole. We've talked a lot about probably next to Hoffenheim, Wolfsburg are the most poorly balanced roster in the league. One of the reasons why we knew that Leverkusen were going to make a title push this year, as was alluded to by Alex, is that Simon Rolfes and Xabi Alonso worked together to build the roster this offseason. Okay, and of course, when you bring in a player, Granit Xhaka's caliber, I mean, that's almost, you know, it makes them look like more geniuses than they are. The squad is very, very poorly put together. They can't bring Jörg Schmatke back until the summer. And I don't think that Oliver Glasner wants to come back and work for a Germany's green company team again either. So, yeah, I mean, where do you find a candidate to coach the squad? Where? I mean, as we've just seen with Bielka, rushing your coaching search can really, really damage your team's prospects. So I think they don't have much of a choice but to stick with them if they want to avoid getting dragged down into the relegation pack. But they're just going to have to scratch Europe for now. I mean, they simply have to.
I can't see Europe happening for them at all this season. Like you say, just to be mid-table mediocrity at the moment is a bit of a battle for them. On top of that, we had a 1-1 draw, Hoffenheim-Heidenheim, which we thought would be a good contest, which it ended up being. And Union Berlin winning the basement battle fixture, holler back with the all-important goal on Sunday, early afternoon viewing. Really important victory for them as we look towards the table, particularly at the bottom, where we've got Darmstadt Mainz joint on 11, Köln on 12, and now there again, there is a bit of a gap. 5 points to Union. Alex, whilst we've got you on the show, it'd be a good opportunity for us to hear your thoughts on the relegation race. Who are you penning to go down this year?
So yeah, Darmstadt by far the weakest squad in the league. Also say Köln as well. Season is so bad right now, on and off the pitch. And obviously, as Leverkusen fan, I hope they go down. And I think when they go down, they'll probably stay down for at least a couple of seasons. Mainz at the moment are struggling, but they do have, I think, enough quality. And I'd probably say my final team to go down would be Union Berlin. I think maybe they've just run out of steam just a little bit. They were overperforming. Their way of playing football was just anti-football for so long. Mm-hmm. And I think with the big names they brought in the summer, clearly hasn't worked out. They've lost the team spirit, which was their biggest strength.
Yeah.
It was a massive result, obviously, the weekend, but that was against Darmstadt, so can't really draw too much on that.
True. Very good stuff. So we'll just finish off with our Bundesliga boxes hero of the week. And I must admit, I'm not as prepared as I should be for this. So let me just talk my way through to check Twitter/X for the end result. I think if I remember correctly, our candidates were Dennis Undav for his hat trick over the weekend. There was also a shout out for Fulkrug, of course, who also got a hat trick. So fair play to him. Two penalties, though. We also had Moritz Niklas in net for some good saves. Obviously, keeping a clean sheet against Leverkusen. How many people do that? I'm sure that wouldn't have got Alex's vote mind. And Hollerback for his very important goal for Union Berlin to get that big win. And I can announce with great glee that once I finish typing it, you'll probably guess who has won it. Peter is giving us a visual aid as well. But yes, the Bundesliga boxes hero of the week was Dennis Undav with 56% of the vote, ahead of Fulkrug with 33%. So that was definitely our Dortmund fans on the vote there. But yeah, thank you to everyone who voted, and well done, Mr. Undav. Fantastic performance in a great, great weekend for VfB Stuttgart. So yeah, what we'll just end up is a little bit of standard admin. So please leave a thumbs up on tonight's show if you possibly can do for Alex's guest appearance and all the Leverkusen chat that we've had. If you've not caught us whilst we've been live and you're watching subsequently, by all means, please do leave a comment and a question for Alex, and we'll see if we can pick that up in due course afterwards in the chat. And of course, subscribe to the channel so you don't miss out on any more excellent content that is coming. As we've sneakily alluded to, Peter and Mark were very busy at the weekend, and they'll be scurrying together some excellent vlogs for you all to enjoy. They'll be out in no time, hopefully. And in the meantime, we'll go in straight through the week with predictions and fantasy football, hopefully. Of course, as well, podcast-wise, if you can leave a rating and a review, that would be absolutely smashing. But yeah, all there is really for us to say is thank you so much, Alex, for joining us tonight. Hope you've enjoyed being able to talk Leverkusen with us. Really appreciate your time. And, you know, we wish you and Leverkusen all the luck possible for the rest of the season. Hope you manage to get out there as well a couple of times before the season's over.
Yeah, thankfully I'm going in March. I'm going to go to see the first leg of the Europa League. It'll be the away leg. Don't know where it's going to be. And also the game against Wolfsburg. But yeah, it's been amazing to talk to you. And yeah, love talking about Leverkusen, favourite thing. So thank you for the opportunity.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Peter, as per. Thank you, everyone, for watching. And we shall see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you.